Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos Daf Yud Aleph, and we will begin on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph on the top line of Ashi Savala Kresh Lakish. As we learned in the previous daf, there's Machloikis Resh Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. If a brother did chalitza with one of the wives of the brother who passed away without children, so we learned a machlokes Resh Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, what will be the din regarding the other brothers and this woman? Everyone agrees that this woman, the chalutza, who received chalutza from a brother, her iser to have relations with this brother, her chalutz, is no more than a lav. The question is regarding the other brothers to her. Resh Lakish says that the relation of the other brothers to her is a chiyuv karis, because Resh Lakish, as the Gemara explained, holds that the brother who did chalitza, the Torah reduced that iser from being previously an iser karis of Eishes Ach to a new iser, which is an iser lav of a chalutza. But the other brothers who do not perform chalitza remain with their iser kares. Rabbi Yochanan says that the chalitza that was done by one brother, that brother was really acting as a shliach for all the other brothers. And just like the iser between him, between the chalitz and chalutza, is no more than iser lav, so to the iser of relations between the other brothers and this woman who received chalitza is only an isalav. The Gemara then quoted a braisa, which the reisha of the braisa seems to indicate like Rabbi Yochanan's shita, and the seif of the braisa seems to indicate like Resh Lakish's shita, because the braisa indicated that if somebody did chalitza and then afterwards married his chalutza, who we just explained, that's an issa lav. So the braisa says that if this second brother should pass away without children, this woman who was previously a chalutza of her deceased husband requires chalitza from the other brothers. Says Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that the relationship between the other brothers to this woman is only an issa lav, so you can understand why chalitza is required. Because as we've learned and will learn in Mitzvah Hashem, when there's only an issa lav at stake, Esa Daichalaisa say, the chiv of Yibum overrides the chiv, the issa lav, and chalitza is required. But according to Resh Lakish, that says that the relation, that the brothers who did not do chalitza are usher to this chalutza with issa karis. When there's an issa karis, as we learned at the beginning of the Masecht already, there is no obligation and there's no ability actually to do chalitza. That's the kasha and Resh Lakish. On the other hand, the sefer says that if one of the brothers should be mekadosh this chalutza, it's not considered a kedushin. So according to Resh Lakish, it's understood since there's a chiyuv karis, wherever the relation is the iser karis, kedushin is not typhus. Kedushin cannot be effective. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that there's only an iser lav between these other brothers and this woman, why is the halacha that one of the brothers did kedushin? There would be a chiyuv. The kedushin is not effective. If it's only a chiyuv lav, the rabbanon hold the kedushin is effective. So the reisha and the sefer, besides contradicting each other, the reisha points to Rabbi Yochanan's position, and the sefer points to Resh Lakish's position. Says the Gemara, Rav Ashi savlak Rav Shlakish. Rav Ashi holds like Resh Lakish umetaslak Rav Shimon, but he's able to explain that the braisa follows the shita of Reb Shimon, which we'll explain soon, and therefore he can reconcile both the Reish and the Sefer to be understood according to Reish Lakish. Ravina Sava like Reb Yochanan. Ravina, on the other hand, holds like Reb Yochanan, Umetaretz Krabonan, and he holds, and he will explain that the entire Braisa goes according to the Shita of the Rabbonan who argue with Reb Shimon. The Gemara explains Rav Ashi's interpretation of the Braisa. Rav Ashi Sava like Reish Lakish, Umetaretz like Reb Shimon. Rashi agrees with Reish Lakish and explains the Braisa according to Reb Shimon. As we learnt, but a word of introduction and understanding Reb Shimon's position. We learnt at the beginning of the Masechta that one of the situations where there is no din of Yibum, not only is there no din of Yibum, where actually Yibum may not be performed, is Eishes Ochiv Shalahoy Balamai. Simple situation. Ruvain, Shimon, Levi. Ruvain passed away without children. But when Ruvain passed away, Levi was not even yet born. The halacha is that Reuven's wife, our Mishnah taught us, will never be permitted to Levi for marriage, even after Shimon performs Yibum with her, because Levi and Reuven did not live in the world at the same time, and that's called Eishes Ochiv Shalahoy Balamai. And that is the position of the Rabbanan. Levi will never be able to marry the woman who was a widow of Reuven. Rav Shimon has a more limited interpretation of the halach of Eishes Ochiv Shalahoy Balamai. He says that if Reuven passed away, and before Shimon could do anything with Reuven's widow, Levi was born, certainly, says Rav Shimon, he agrees that there's a din of Eishes Ochiv Shalahoy Balamai. But, says Rav Shimon, if Shimon did Yibum, and then only Levi was born, should Shimon pass away afterwards, says Rav Shimon, Levi would have to do Yibum and Chalitza in this woman who is Shimon's widow, who actually was originally Reuven's widow. And the explanation of Rav Shimon's position is because when Levi comes to the world, he finds this woman married to Shimon. The fact that this woman was once married to Reuven and became Shimon's wife through a Yibum of Shimon to her is not something that is of relevance to Levi. Levi came to the world and found this woman married to Shimon. And now if Shimon, his brother, who Levi and Shimon lived in the world at the same time, should pass away without children, Levi must do Yibum. But now the Gemara goes a little further in explaining Rav Shimon's position in interpreting this braisa. Hacholot Sliyavimtai. Reuven passed away, left a widow, and Shimon did Chalitza, v'chaz v'kitcha. And then he went and married her, which, as we explained in our introductory remarks, there's a chi of lav for Shimon to do that. One may not marry his chalutza, but given that it's only an iser lav, the kedushin is effective. Hacholitz liyavimtai v'chaz v'kitcha. Tzricha chalitza min achim. The halacha is that she requires chalitza from the other brothers. So the question we asked, according to Reish Lakish, the other brothers' relation to her is a chiyuv karis. How could she require chalitza? Says the Gemara, the Reish Lakish will explain that the braisa's man achim, who are the brothers that we're referring to, achim hayeludim, the brothers who were only born after Shimon did this kedushin. Levi, who we explained, was only born after Shimon did this kedushin. Kaman, Reb Shimon, which follows the position of Reb Shimon, that since when Levi was born, Shimon was already married to this woman. So since Shimon was already married to this woman, he doesn't know anything about the previous history of Reuven, a brother that he never lived with in the world at the same time, who was once married to this woman. And therefore, even Reish Lakish will agree that he's chayiv to do chalitza in this woman. The Rishonim point out that even though we're indicating that Levi, according to Rav Ashi, and this question that we're discussing now is also relevant to Rabbi Yochanan, the brothers who do chalitza with this widow of Shimon certainly can only do chalitza. Yibum is never under discussion that it should be performed. And there are a number of explanations in the Rishonim. One explanation given the Rishonim is, as we've been saying from the beginning of the Masechta, what is the purpose of Yibum? To be boina, to build the home of the brother who died without children. But here we have a situation that the brother was married to a woman who he should not have been married to, albeit only with a chi of laugh. But they should not have been married to each other. If so, this is not a home that should be rebuilt. And therefore only chalitza is appropriate, not yibum. Another pshat, Gemara actually quotes this kind of a svara on Amud Beis, b'mutala asr, the brother who she was married to, she should not have been married to. So this brother, the other brother, who normally is asr to her, because of the isser of Eishes Ach, certainly should not do yibum, should only do chalitza. There's another machlok, so that everybody agrees that the brothers who do chalitza, according to Rabbi Yochanan under all circumstances, according to Reish Lakish with Rav Shimon's interpretation, only in the case where the brother was born after the chalitza and kedusha were performed, only should do chalitza, not yibum. But now we have another interesting machlokes Rishonim. The way Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim explain our Gemara, the reason Levi does chalitza is because when Levi comes to the world, he already finds Shimon married to this woman, albeit, as we just said, they should not be married because it's an isalav, because this woman is his Shimon's chalutza. But what would be if Shimon performed chalitza and was not mekadosh her yet, and then Levi was born, and then Shimon was mekadosh her? Rashi, Tosfos, many Rishonim seem to say that our Gemara will hold that even if Shimon will agree under those circumstances that chalitza, that Shimon, Levi does not do chalitza, because she wasn't married to Shimon when Levi was born. Other Rishonim, the Ritva, says that no, that as soon as Shimon does chalitza, if Levi is born afterwards, even if only then does Shimon marry her, Levi would have to do chalitza. Ritva's pshat is actually maybe simpler to understand, because as we've explained, once Shimon does yibum or chalitza to this woman, the relationship that existed between this woman and her first husband, Reuven, is over. And therefore, Levi, when he comes to the world, doesn't know about any relationship between Reuven, a brother who did not live with him in this world at the same time, and this woman. And that's why the Ritva holds that as soon as Shimon does chalitza, even if Levi is born before Shimon does kedushin to this woman, if afterwards Shimon does kedushin and then dies without children, Levi should do chalitza. On the other hand, how will we explain Rashi and Tosfos' position? So the Stipler explains that when we look at Reb Shimon's wording, when we will learn it in Mitzvah Shem, Reb Shimon uses the words bo umatza beheter. When he came to the world, he found this woman beheter. What does beheter mean? Says the Stipler, what Rashi and Tosfos will explain, bo matza beheter means that he found her already married to Shimon. That's why he looks at her as Shimon's wife, nothing else. But if all she is at the point when Levi is born is Shimon's chalutza, that's not considered bo matza beheter. And therefore, Rashi and Tosfos hold that unless Shimon performed kedushin in this woman prior to Levi being born, Levi will not do chalitza because there will be a consideration of Eishes Achiv Shalai Hayiba Lama. Continues the Gemara in explaining the Brisa according to Rish Lakish. Omer Achiv Minayin Lodim V'Ketcha. But let's say the Sefer which says that there is Kedushin cannot be effective between one of the brothers and this woman who was Shimon's chalutza and then Shimon married her. Ein lo yav klum. That Kedushin is meaningless. Kaman, Rish Lakish. That's Rish Lakish's position. As we explained in our introductory remarks, the Rish Lakish holds that there's a chiyuv kares between this brother, the brothers who did not perform chalitza and the woman who received chalitza. And since it's a chiyuv kares, the Kedushin is not effective. That's how Rav Ashi explains the entire Braisa according to Rish Lakish's position. Ravina, on the other hand, sabak Rav Yochanan, umetas lo li with the Rabbanan. Ravina holds like Rav Yochanan, and explains the Braisa according to Rabbanan. The first case of the Braisa, hachoyles liyivimta, if somebody performs chalitza, v'chaz v'kitchen, then he does kedushin, which is a chiyiv lav, tzricha chalitza min achim. This woman requires chalitza from the other brothers, man achim, who are the brothers that we're referring to? Achim and aladim, the brothers who are in the world. Command Rav Yochanan, because as Rav Yochanan explained on Daf Yoram Abayis, the other brothers who did not do chalitza, their iser to this woman who received chalitza from Shimon is only an iser lav, and when the only iser between a woman who's subject to chalitza and the brothers is only an iser lav, chalitza should be performed, as Rav Yochanan explained. However, continues the Braisa, Oma Echem Ne Yeludim V'Kitcha. Rav Yochanan holds like the Rabbanan, as we explained, who have a very broad definition of Eishes Achiv Shalai Hayiba Lamai. Any brother who was born after a woman who became a widow to a brother who died without children, makes no difference what happened to this woman afterwards, who she married afterwards. This relationship, Levi to Reuven, is the relationship of an Eishes Achiv Shalai Balamai. Levi was born after Reuven died, so even though this woman went and married Shimon, doesn't change the fact that Levi and Reuven were Eishes Achiv Shalai Balamai. They weren't in the world at the same time. Therefore, Levi will never be allowed to be married to this woman. And therefore, Ein lo yav klum, Kedushin is not Taifis, command this reflects the sheet to the Rabbanim. And as Taifis actually points out, the Gemara could have explained this Braisa even according to Rav Shimon. Because as we explained, even Rav Shimon agrees that if Levi was born before Shimon did Chalitza, there would be an Isser of Eishes Achiv Shalai Balamai. And we could explain that that's the case that the Braisa is referring to. Just Taisa says the Gemara wanted to explain that the Braisa follows the sheet of the Rabbanon because we hold la halacha like the Rabbanon. Itmar continues the Gemara, mentioning a machlokes, a similar machlokes. The halacha is habal yivama. If one brother did yibum, so the halacha is that only one act of yibum is permitted. So if one brother, one of the surviving brothers, did yibum with one of the widows of a brother who died without children, or ba echad ben achim al tzarasa, and now one of the other brothers had relations with one of the other wives that the brother left over. Plegabar of Acharavina, we have a machloikus of Acharavina. Chad amar bekares, one says there's an issa kares, v'chad amar basay, and one says there's an issa asay. Mand amar bekares, the mandam that says that the chiv karas here, Kresh Lakish, follows the Resh Lakish position. For as we explained, according to Resh Lakish, only the brother who does chalitza, his isser of having relations with the chalutza is reduced to chiv lav. But the other brothers to this woman, and actually as the Gemara taught us in the previous year, even this brother who did chalitza with the other wives, or remain a chiyuv kares, or man dam basay Rabbi Yochanan, because as Rabbi Yochanan says, the iser is reduced to a chiyuv asay, and that iser is reduced both to the brother who performed chalitza and to the other brothers, and both to the wife who received the chalitza and to the other wives who did not receive chalitza. Tosus points out that our Gemara seems to say that there's a chiv asay. The chiv that why one may not marry one of these other women is because the pasuk says kocha ya'asal ish ashla yivna as beis achiv, and we learn as beis achiv bayis echur abayna veina abayna shnei batim. It should only be a relationship with one wife. But the question is kivin shabana, and the Gemara continues to explain, as we will learn, kivin shabana, once these women weren't candidates, they did not receive chalitza shuvla yivna, they no longer can be candidates. But isn't that a lav? So most Rishonim learn that since it's a lav, haba mechlal asay, the wording of the pasuk is in an asay form, so it has the din of an asay. Other Rishonim seem to learn that it has the din of a lav, and that there are other Rishonim that make a difference between the brother who did chalitza, to him the Isser will be an only an Isser Asay, whereas the other brothers will have, according to Rabbi Yochanan, an Isser Lav. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Maraf, Tsaris Soita Asura. The Soita that's being referred to in our Gemara, the Mefarshim explained, is a woman who definitely had an adulterous relationship. There are witnesses that saw her have relationship with another man. And Rav tells us that not only is this woman, who's obviously not allowed to remain with her husband, not eligible for Yibum Chalitza if her husband dies without children, but even her tzorois, even her co-wives, may not have Yibum and Chalitza. And the Mefarshim ask a very fundamental question. Why does the Gemara only refer to the case of the tzor of the Saita? Why doesn't the Gemara refer to the Saita herself to tell us that she should not be eligible? She's exempt from Yibum Chalitza given that she was a tzara. So there's a machloikis how to explain it. Rashi seems to learn, based on the next word of the Gemara, Tumak Siba Barayis. The reason the Saita is exempt from Yibum Chalitza, because since she's called Tamei, so since she's called Tamei, so she gets the status of an Erva. And as we learned already in the first Mishnah of HaMasechta, an Erva is exempt from Yibum Chalitza. And that exemption extends to her co-wives. And that's why the Gemara is telling us that she's so much considered an Erva that not only is she exempt, but even her tzaras are exempt. Other Rishonim, however, learn different pshat. They learn that the reason the Gemara only refers to a Tzara Saita is because the Tzara Saita, we have to rely on what the Gemara says here, that the Saita is called Tamei, and therefore that Isser extends to her. But the Saita herself, there's a different reason why she's exempt from Yibum Chalitza. Because the pasuk says, V'holcha v'hoysa lish acher v'loy liyovam. She's not allowed to be married to the Yavam. And actually, these two pshatim, how we just explained the Gemara, have very fundamental repercussions to a shaila that the Nemuke Yosef discusses. Nemuke Yosef asks, we know the halacha is that Rachmana Litzlan, a woman is raped, if she's married to Yisrael, she's an anusa. She's allowed to have relations with her husband. If she's, on the other hand, married to a Kayin, she may no longer have relations with her husband. What will be the din, asked the Nemuke Yosef, if there was a Kayin married to a woman who was raped? Will this woman be exempt from Yibum? Will this woman's Isser go and extend to her co-wives? And the Achronim discussed the Shaila and the Muke Yosef very much at length. The Rav Shmuel Rozovsky has the interesting Shaila, will it make a difference if the Kohen's brothers are Kohanim or if the Kohen's brothers are Chalolim? But perhaps in understanding the Muke Yosef Shaila, It's based on what we just expressed. If we're going to learn that the reason the Saita, not just the Sarah Saita, is Asr, but the Saita herself is Asr because it says Tomah, this woman we can't call Tomei. She was never raped, but she's not Tomei. But if the problem is, because as the Gemara says, V'holcha v'yoyotza l'sh'acher, she's not allowed to be married to her husband, and therefore she's not allowed to be married to the Yavam. So even though she didn't do anything wrong, and she's certainly not Tomei, the din will be that she's not allowed to have Yibam Mechalitza, nor will her co-wives. Masr Rav Chisda asks Rav Chisda, it says in a brisa, Rav Shimon Omer, be asoy ochelot sasoy, mi achav shorishain, the Yibam or Chalitza, from the brother of the first husband, Pateras Tsarasa. So as the Rishonim disagree, but the Kasha, how to learn the Kasha, but we get to the same point, here we see that she, either we say, that she is subject to Chalitza. And the other Mefarshim say, the point is from Patera Tsarasa, that the Tsara gets exempt. It's obvious that she was obligated, just this Bio or Chalitza exempted her. What is the case that's being referred to? So as the Mefarshim explain, we're going to learn that Pei Zayin. The Gemara says there, if a woman's husband disappears, Midaraisa, if one aide comes and says that her husband died, we believe him, and this woman may get remarried. However, if after she gets remarried, the first husband comes, so the Gemara says, the Chazal say, Teitse mizeh mizeh. Even though she didn't do anything wrong, when she married her second husband, she married him completely beheter. Chazal wanted that this woman should be certain and do all required investigation to make sure that her first husband died. She obviously didn't do adequate investigation, proof being that her husband came, and therefore she's not allowed to remain with the second husband, nor go back to the first husband. However, tells us the Gemara there, if before the first husband divorces her, he dies. So the Braisa says, "Be asoy chilutzasa me'achav shorishin." If a brother did yibum or chalitza to her, it exempts her and her co-wives. So as we explained, we see from here that she is a subject of yibum or chalitza, and she certainly, as we also explained, doesn't exempt her co-wives. So we see that a woman who had relations with another man is subject to Yibam Mechalitza. Not like what Rav said. The Rav said that the Saita, and the way most Rishonim explain, say that the Saita itself is completely exempt from Yibam Mechalitza. Here we see not so. Amloch Rav. So Rav says, Amin Aloch, I discussed a case of Saita Daraisa, as we began this year. We were referring to a woman who we know had relations, illicit relations. That's where Rav says that this woman is exempt from Yibam and Chalitza and extends it to her co-wives. That amritli soit rabbanim, as we explained, this woman midaraisa didn't do anything wrong, and she's allowed to go back to her first husband. It's only the rabbanim that made such a gzeira because they want to make sure the women properly investigate before they remarry. Can we compare the two situations? Ask the Gemara or the Karola Makarola. The difference between the two cases is so obvious. What was the Gemara's Havamina? In the first case that we described, the woman had an illicit relationship, Bemezid. Here this woman got married Midaraisa Beheter. It's just the Rabbanan wanted her to do more investigation. Answers the Gemara Kasava, the Gemara held, called the Tikkun Rabbanan Ka'en Daraisa Tikkun. And as Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman in the Sefer Yals HaShachar explains the Gemara beautifully. The question that the Gemara was posing, the Havamina was, how do we look at the case of the woman who got remarried based on the first one aid, and then her husband does come? And we therefore say that she's no longer allowed to live with her first husband. Is it because we consider it a situation of Tumah? And as we said at the beginning of this piece of Gemara, whenever there's a situation of Tumah, there's an exemption from Yibam and Chalitza, which not only exempts that woman, but even extends to her co-wives. Or is it a special knas that Chazal, as we explained, wanted women to carefully check if their husbands indeed passed away? And if they didn't check properly, and the first husband comes, we tell her you're no longer allowed to go back to her, but it's a knas, it's a fine. But not because we say that tumah, that it's a situation of tumah. And I saw a beautiful vort on this concept of called the tikkun rabbanon, ke'en deraisa tikkun. There's an interesting Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh says that when we say Kriya Shema every day, three times a day, two times a day midaraisa, the chi of deraisa is only on the parish of Shema v'ahavta. The parish of Ahoyim Shemaya is only a chi of the same midrabbanon. The Tzlach argues. The Tzlach says the chiv to say Krishma, both parishes, v'hafta and v'hoyim shemaya, are midaraisa. And the Tzlach has a beautiful raya. He says, the Gemara Masech, the Brachas, discusses why do we say the parasha v'hafta before we say the parasha v'hoyim shemaya. And the Gemara says, because the parasha v'hafta represents Kabbalah's oil machu shemayim, whereas the parasha of Ahoyim Shemayim represents Kabbalos or Mitzvahs, and we want to have Kabbalos or Mach Shemayim first. Says the Tzlach, if the Shagas Aryeh is right, then Vahafta is a Daraisa, and Vahoyim Shemayim is a Rabbanon, what's the Gemara's Kasha? Obviously we should say the parasha that we're Mechuyiv to say Midaraisa, before we say the parasha that we're only obligated to say Midrabbanon. So it must be, what's the Gemara's kasha? What's the Gemara's need to say a teretz? It must be that both are midaraisa, says Reb Tzadik. But if now our Gemara taught us that called the tikkun rabbanon came the deraisa tikkun, that once the rabbanon says something, it has the status of deraisa. So fine, the Shagas Aryeh could be right, says Reb Tzadik, that v'hoyim shemoy is only a derabbanon. But even if the Rabbanon came the Raisa Tikkun, and therefore the Gemara can legitimately ask, why is Vahafta said before Vahayim Shemaya? Says the Gemara another question to Rav. Moser Rav Ashi, Nichnasom L'Seisa. This is the classical case of a Saita, where a woman was warned, kinui, by her husband, not to seclude herself with a man, and she does seclude herself with this man, V'shasim Mekidei Tumah, and she remains with him the amount of time in which they could have had relations. The halacha is a sura lebeisa. She may not have any more relations with her husband. The sura lechel betruma. She may not eat truma. And as Rashi points out, the Torah uses regarding this woman the word nitma three times to teach us echel lebal. She can't have relations with her husband. Echel leboil. She can't have relationship with the man she's suspected of having had relations with. V'echel truma, she may not eat truma of her husband's akayim. V'meis, but if her husband dies before she goes through the process of the saita that we give her the mayim and ma'orim to drink, da'lochitz chaylatzes v'lemes yabemes. She only has chalitza and not yibum. But we see from here that a saita is the subject of chalitza. I, Rav, says that a saita is exempt from chalitza and yibum. Amalach Rav, so Rav answers, Aminalach anos saita vadai. I refer to a saita that, for sure, as we began this piece of Gemara, that we know for sure that this woman had relations with a man. She had an adulterous relationship. Vat amritli at saita sofik. This woman, we may have strong suspicions about what she did, but we can't say for sure she did adultery, and therefore the two situations cannot be compared. And as the Mefarshim explained, I, the Torah, as we just explained, calls this woman Nitma, not only once, but as we explained, it says it three times, Echel Lebal, V'Echel Leboil, V'Echel Letruma. So Rishonim explained, that's only teaching us that she should be treated like a woman who had an adulterous relationship. But it doesn't say that she's for sure Tomei, that she should be considered a erva because she's Tomei. The Rishonim ask, why when we have a woman who we suspect had an adulterous relationship, and as we explain, it's really more than a suspicion. Her husband warned her not to seclude herself with him, and she secluded herself with him, Kedei Tumah. Do we have a question? Is she considered an adulteress, or it's only a Sofik? Don't we have a din of Safik Daraisa L'chumra? Whenever there's a Safik Midaraisa, we should be Machmer. So there are a number of answers given. One answer is that we know there's a Machloikis, Rambam, and Rajba. When we say Safik Daraisa L'chumra, is it that a din Midaraisa, or is it that only a din Midrabonim? So according to the Rambam, it's only a din Midrabonim. Here we want to treat a Midaraisa L'chumra, but that doesn't work, because according to Rambam, Safik Daraisa L'chumra is only a din Midrabonim. Another answer given is that every woman married to a man has a Cheskes Kashrus, and therefore, even though there's a Safik, the Cheskes Kashrus does not allow us to say Safik Daraisa L'chumra. But then I saw two other Terutzim. When do we have a situation of Safik Daraisa L'chumra? For example, if we have a piece of meat, and we don't know if it's kosher or treif, Safik Daraisa L'chumra tells us to treat the meat as it's treif, Safik Daraisa L'chumra. Here, however, because there's nobody telling us that the piece of meat is kosher. Here, however, the woman is sitting and proclaiming that she did not do anything wrong. And therefore, we don't treat it like a Safik Daraisa L'chumra. Another teretz given by Rav Chaim Briska, a Lomdusha teretz, is as follows. How do we consider something a Safik? If we have a piece of meat that we know it's kosher, do we just all of a sudden say it's a Safik, that maybe it's not kosher? Of course we don't. We have no reason to have such a Safik. It's kosher. What the Torah is telling us, if a woman secluded herself with a man that her husband told her not to be with, who says that that's a Safik? That we should say the concept of Safik Daraisa L'chumra. That's what the Torah is telling us, what status she has and what status she doesn't have. Says the Gemara, so what we're saying now is that a woman who for sure had an adulterous relationship is called Tameh, and therefore she's considered like an Erva. However, a woman who we only have suspicions about, albeit strong suspicions, is considered not Tameh. Umayishna soita vadai, mishum neksiba tuma. Ask the Gemara, sota safik nami tuma ksiba. A woman who's a safik soita is also considered Tameh. The Tanya, Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur, oimer, mishum Rabbi Elazar. Hamachs grishasai. The halach is, if one divorces his wife, as long as his wife does not get remarried, he may remarry his wife. However, if his wife gets remarried, he may no longer remarry her. The question is, what does it mean that we said that she got remarried? Does it mean, as we know, there's two stages to a marriage, Erusin and Nisuin? Does it mean that she had Nisuin? Or does it mean even if she only had Erusin, she's already considered remarried and her husband may not remarry her? The Tanya. Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Hamachs Grushasoi Min HaNesuin. If this woman, if his wife, if his former wife had Nesuin with another man, that's when Asur, she's forbidden to remarry her first husband. Min HaErisin, but if she only had Erisin with the second husband, Materis, she's allowed to remarry the first husband. Mishum Shanema, what's the basis for Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur's reasoning? Because the Pasuk says, Achrei Yeshua Tama. The Pasuk says, La yucha bala arishin asha sholcha loshev lakachto lias loy liisha achrei hashuhutama ki se'evuhu lefnei Hashem. Says Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur, achrei shuhutama means that there was nesuin. And in fact, some Rishonim go so far to say, not just were there nesuin, there was actually physical relations. That's when she may not remarry her first husband. That's what the pasuk of Achrei Hashuhutama means. Otherwise, she may remarry her first husband. The Chamaimrim Achazu VeAchazu Asura. It makes no difference if there was only Erisin. Elman Mekayim. Ida pasuk says Achrei Hutama, which seems to indicate that only if there was relations, or at least there were Nesuin with the second husband. Otherwise, she may remarry the first husband. The Rabbanan say that this pasuk is coming to include the case of a soita who was secluded with a man that her husband told her she's not allowed to, and to teach us that such a woman is not allowed to have relations with her husband. So we see from the Chachamim that the word hutama refers to a Saita Sofik, and yet we use the word tamay, even though we're not 100% certain. We don't have Edim that she had such relations. It's only a Saita Sofik. Why don't the Rabbanan explain the Pasuk like Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa? So Tosfos explains, the Pasuk according to Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, when it says the words Achrei Shotama, is teaching us that she had relations with a second husband. Say the Rabbanan, she married this second husband 100% legitimately. Why would we call relations with such a husband Hutama? There's nothing Tamei about it. That's what forces the Chachamim to separate the Pasuk into two, and to say that the first part of the Pasuk is teaching us the din of Masuk Rishasoi, that if a woman was divorced, she's not allowed to marry her husband as soon as she married any type of marriage, even just Erisin, her second husband. And the second part of the Pasuk, albeit it doesn't seem to be part of what the Pasuk is teaching us the Halach of a Saita. So we see here that a Saita is considered Tamei. So why did Rav say that Tum is limited only to a confirmed adulteress? Says the Ramai Nistera, when the Rabbanim speak here about a Saita, it doesn't mean a woman that's only a Saita that there's suspicions. It's talking about Nivala, that we know for sure she had relations with the second, with another man. For my Carly Nistera, why don't we say that Nivala, that she had relations? Says the Ramai, Lashem Ayanakit. The Ramai wants to use a nicer language than to say Nivala. Ask the Gemara, Nivala, if we're saying that Rabbanan are explaining that this pasuk is referring to a woman that actually had relations with another man, Tamei v'hadik sibah, there's already another pasuk that speaks and calls this woman Tamei, v'nistra v'hi nitma. So why do I need this pasuk to teach me that she's considered Tamei? Tense the Gemara, l'mekem ala b'laf. This pasuk is come to teach us that if the husband has relations with a wife who we know had relations with another man, there's an Isser Lav that he's over for having relations with her. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, that says that this pasuk of Achrei Shutama has nothing to do with a Saita. He said that this pasuk is referring to the Machzik Rishasoi. Lav is Saita lastly. He holds that there is no Lav when a woman, even a confirmed adulteress, has if she has relations with a husband, there is no chiv lav, but feels no nami. Even she definitely committed adultery. My tama, what's his reason? Havai of ishes ksiba. This pasuk says v'hoyselish acher. It speaks about getting married to a second man that she was married to, not adultery. And therefore, as we explained before, Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa does not accept that this pasuk should be referring to a situation of adultery. Says the Gemara, Baim rem. If somebody remarries his divorcee, as we just learned, that he's not supposed to, the mace, and then he dies. As Mefarshim say, she herself is certainly not a subject of Yibum, because the husband, as we explained earlier, should have never married her. It's an Isalav. As we explained, if the woman was not supposed to be married to her husband, we don't extend that marriage to the Yavam. The question is, what will be the halacha on the tzara? Says the Gemara, leave it to Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, like to be halacha. According to Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, that's not a question. Kivin d'amar Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa, since Rabbi Yosef ben Kippa said, Tumah v'machzu g'shasa u'd'ksiva, that the pasuk of Achrishu Tama is referring to machzu g'shasa, so this woman that her husband takes back is called Tamei. Tamei is an erva, is not subject to Yibim Chalaitza, and where whenever one wife is an Erva, the Loch is Tzarasa Kamasai, the Tzara has the same din as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta. Vimishum Diksiba, I the Pasuk says Ta'ivahi, which seems to say only she and no one else, says the Gemara, that Pasuk is coming to teach us something else. He Ta'iva, that only she's considered rejected, Vain Benel Ta'ivim, but not her children. If a man took back his wife after she was married to another man, even though he shouldn't have, that doesn't affect the children that will be born from such marriage. Hatsarasa, Hatsara, is a Ta'eva, and she is rejected, because she's Tamei, and it extends to her co-wives. Kitibailach, says the Gemara, I'll leave the Rabbanan. The question is according to Rabbanan. that the word tumah said in this pasuk is tumah b'saita u'diksiv, it's referring to the saita, not to the case of machshir shasai. However, perhaps ein mikra yotzim de pshutai. The pasuk is speaking about a machshir shasai, and if the pasuk is speaking about a machshir shasai, and it uses the word tumah, perhaps we should say that she's considered tameh, and she's exempt. And exempts her co-wives. Idilma, kivin de'aka akar. As the Rabbanim told us, they have difficulty explaining that the pasuk should be referring, the word tumah in the pasuk should be referring to machzik rishasai. Because what's the tumah of a man marrying a woman who is divorced? And therefore it has nothing to do with machzik rishasai. And therefore machzik rishasai, there is no concept of tumah. That's why there's no exemption, perhaps, to her, and certainly not to her co-wives. Says the Gemara, Ikadamri, another version of explaining this Gemara, I'll leave the Rabbanan loy tibayilach. According to Rabbanan, there's no question, kivin this akar is akar. If she was uprooted, she's uprooted, there is no tumah to be discussed here. Ki tibayilach, the question is to leave the Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur. Mai. Afgav the Amr Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur, tumah machzik rishasai d'ksiva, he said that the word tumah in this pasuk is referring to machzik rishasai. Perhaps, miyit rachmani hi teva. The Torah also then uses the words, Ta'evihi, to teach us that only she's rejected, Vein Tsarasa Ta'eva. It doesn't affect the co-wives. Adama Hi Ta'eva, perhaps the way to understand Hi Ta'eva is to teach us Ein Ba'enea Ta'avin, it doesn't affect the children, her Tsarasa Ta'eva, her co-wife is also rejected, and both of them, the Machzik Rishasai, this woman herself, and her co-wives, are all considered Tamei, all considered Erva, and are not subject to Yibim Chalitza. Perhaps we learned it in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Daf Mem Dalet, "Hois achas ksher v'achas psula." If there were two widows left by a brother who died without children, one is kosher, one is pasul. And my chaylitz, if the brother who is going to do something is doing chalitza, chaylitz l'psula, he does chalitza to the psula. But miyabim, if he's doing yibim, miyabim l'ksher, he should do yibim to the right one. My ksher and my psula. What does ksher mean and what does psula mean? Ilay ksher ksher la'alma. That means that this is a woman who's allowed to marry a kohen. And psula means psula la'alma. That's a woman who may not marry a kohen. But this yovam himself is not a kohen. So ask the gemara kivin l'dochazia. So to him, it doesn't make a difference who's kosher and posel. My nafkul amina. Elaf. What must be the case? Kshera ksher le means the widow may marry the yovam. Psula. Psulalei. Disqualified means that she's now married to Yovam, but it doesn't affect the others. It doesn't affect the co-wives. Mind you, what is such an example? Machzik rishasai. That she herself is disqualified, but it doesn't affect the co-wives. Viktani. And therefore we're learning from Hoysim Yabim Yam Lakshera. So from here we see that our co-wives are subject to Yibam. Says the Gemara, that's not the way to understand this Mishnah. Loilam ksheira ksheira la'alma. Ksheira means that a person, that the woman is qualified to kanim. Psula means psula la'alma, that she's disqualified to kanim. I, we asked of the comrade, kivin l'deichazia, my nafkalimina, if she's allowed to be married to him, he's not a kohen. What's the difference if she's a kosher or a chalutz or not? Mishum Rabbi Yosef. The explanation that Rabbi Yosef taught us. Dar Rabbi Yosef, Kan Shana Rebbe, Le Yishbech Odomei Boiroi, a person should not spill out extra water, Ve'echerim Tzrichon Lehem. The halacha is a kohen may not marry a chalutza. So if there are two women that were widows, one is a woman that's anyway disqualified to marry kohanim, and one is a woman who's not, since this brother is choosing to do chalitza, teach us the Mishnah, do chalitza to the woman who's anyway disqualified to marry kohanim. Don't do chalitza to the woman who may marry kohanim, because you're only disqualifying her for something that she was previously permitted to do. Tashma, hamachzik rishasai mishanisus. If somebody remarries his wife after she got remarried, which, as we learned, is prohibited, he v'tzarasa chalitzas. So we see that she's subject to chalitza, and a tzaras is subject to chalitza, but only chalitza. Says the Gemara, can we bring a raya from this brisa? He v'tzarasa salkadaitach. Could she and her tzara both be obligated to have chalitza? We know that only one wife receives chalitza. El eima, oi he, Ay tzarasa. Either she or her tzara. Because only one gets chalitza. But we see from here that only chalitza is an option, not yibum. So from here we see that the tzara of a machsa grushasoi may not have yibum. Says the Marvelaf through to Kamatatzla. Didn't we have to redefine the brisa and say that the words he v'tzarasa are not accurate? Once we're rewording the brisa, go a step further into Ritzachi. He chaylatzis. The machsa grushasoi is only subject to chalitza. She certainly cannot be subject to yibum, given that she was not allowed to even be married to the husband. It was an Isalav. Tzarasa, if we're redefining the brisa, perhaps oy chaletzis, oy misyabemis, can both have chalitza or yibum. She will not be considered the tzara of an erva. And therefore, this brisa is not considered definitive in teaching us what the halakha should be regarding the tzara of a machzik grushasoi. She's certainly subject to chalitza, but we don't know what her status is regarding yibum.